We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, RotoViz radio listener. This is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to RotoViz.com. Click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021. And you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package, is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to RotoViz.com and subscribe now.
Mahomes has the time, delivers perfectly downfield, touchdown, Patrick Mahomes with a rope.
This one, Adams, touchdown.
This time going deep for Beckham Jr.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to RotoViz Overtime and RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. And I'm joined again by Sean Siegel, my co-host here on RotoViz Overtime. Going overtime and always this week, Sean. It is episode 3 of the podcast, third week in a row with 3 shows. A lot of people do comment, especially in the US, on the way I say 3. It's not pronounced correctly. It should be 3, but 3 by 3 More reviews, please, for my Irish brogue. But if you have, it's Saturday. We're here to have some fun. We're going to talk through a number of different topics, but going to be another good show, Sean.
It is. Today, we're talking about dynasty trades, how to make them, how to become a high volume trader, and why that allows you to win. And then we're going to focus a lot on some of the fun things. We're going to look at some reader. We're going to focus on some of the fun things. We're going to talk about some listener questions, how to make trades in your individual leagues, what years you're going to want to be targeting with your trades, some thoughts on the running back dead zone, and then talk about a few TV shows. Colin, we haven't mentioned the shows for a few episodes. We want to get a couple of our favorites out there. So yeah, this will be a relaxed, fun, listener-driven show today. And we're going to start by talking about how to become a high volume trader in Dynasty.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Off the top of the show, as always, I'm going to remind the listeners, if you want to head over after you finish listening to the show, during the show, if you want to do it, drop us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. We're closing in on 100 reviews on the US iTunes or Apple podcast page. So that's the next target here for us on OT. So give us a written review if you haven't already. Get us towards that 100 review mark. But Sean, today, some of the core elements, we do talk a lot about trades and you know, how to be able to do that. But I think something that people don't think about is, you know, people think about making that one trade to help them win the league, but realistically, it's not that one trade that's going to make it, as the volume of trades that help. You've mentioned this on the show before, if you win, you know, each trade by just 10%, the more of those trades that we do over time, the more value that's going to be added on to that roster. So for you, how important is the volume versus the big trade?
The volume is absolutely crucial, right? We talked about in our recent RotoViz Dynasty Triflex startup that we made 13 trades in the startup. The team that we profiled last week from one of our fellow managers made 14 trades. Our team is set up very nicely now with, we made 19 selections in the first 12 rounds. That gives us a lot of flexibility, right? So we're talking about win now, win forever. We know we have a young team. If a few things fall right in 2021, maybe we win this year. As we go forward, the team should get stronger and stronger. We talked about how on the other end of that, our league mates team with the 14 trades, his team probably is the favorite now to win in 2021. As you can imagine, with all of those trades and our two teams having made the most trades, we had three or four trades with each other, and those trades allowed us to each individually accomplish key objectives. So that's one of the things I talk about a lot in terms of how you can make a lot of trades, is that you want to be looking out to help your fellow manager accomplish their goals. If you can establish yourself as having the reputation of someone who will help that other player get done what they need to get done, then they're going to be the first person to, you're going to be the first person they come to with a trade offer. And we often think in terms of, okay, well, the key thing is making trades. But if you can get to the point where you receive the most trade offers of anybody in your league, then you're half of the way there, right? Because you're not going to want all of those trade offers. And in fact, a lot of the trade offers you're going to look at, and the first thing that you think, and this is true for all of us, is just like, how do they possibly think that I'm going to be interested in this, right? That's just how trade offers tend to come in. But there's a huge value to being the person who gets a lot of the trade offers, because even if it's only 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 30 that you look at and you're like, oh, well, that's actually great for me, then you can accept that trade. And if you have the reputation as someone who they receive a trade offer and they send the reply of, okay, that's not remotely what the value is, you know, this guy is twice as good as that guy, you know, why are you sending this? Then the person just naturally stops sending you offers. Right? The first thing that you want to do when you get an offer is look at that and take the information that's there. So you look at the player on your team that is being asked for, and you put that in your memory bank as, okay, this is someone who is valued by this particular owner. On the flip side, you look at the player that's been offered you, you say, okay, this is someone this owner is willing to give up and might part with for a little bit less than value, or might part with at value. Because one of the things that we have to deal with when we're trying to make dynasty trades is the fact that the player that you have on your team, the very fact that you made the investment, whether that was through a startup pick, whether it was through a trade, whether through it was buying in an auction, like we talked about on Thursday, you've made the investment in such a way that you're almost certainly higher than the market on that guy. When you look at the player the owner is, other owner is offering you, they're almost certainly higher than the market on that guy. So if you're both starting from the perspective of having slightly inaccurate or optimistic valuations, and what are the chances of meeting in the middle? But again, it's all important information, because you're trying to find, as you trade your players, you're trying to find the person in your league who, like you, values that person in the market. And simply knowing that by being someone who gets a lot of offers because you respond in a friendly way to offers gives you that information. So when you receive a trade offer in, you don't have to look at it in terms of, okay, well, I don't want to trade player A for player B. You can look at it as, then you can send out return offers where you look at trying to explain, okay, well, these are the guys on your team that I would be willing to put in a package for the person you want. And then you send a separate set of offers saying, okay, the player you've offered me, these are the guys that I would be willing to give up to get that. So you can look at it as really two separate things, but in order to have that information, you've got to establish yourself as having the reputation of someone who is fun to talk with, is fun to trade with, someone who you're willing to chat about the trades for a while, even if a trade doesn't get done. Now, depending on the time that you have, depending on what you like about Dynasty, if you don't have a lot of time and the part that you enjoy about Dynasty Fantasy isn't trading, then maybe that isn't something for you. But you know, if you've paid $50 to be in a league with your college friends, then I mean, you probably want to talk with them about football players, right? If you've paid $500 to be in a RotoViz Triflex league, then you probably like fantasy football and enjoy talking about it. So creating this environment where you can talk about players with someone else who shares that same passion That has some benefits even beyond just this idea of, okay, how can we make trades?
Yeah, and I think to wrap them up, some of the core elements, the four core elements that you mentioned for those high volume dynasty trading are offer balanced trades. So basically, where you're sending elite players to the trade partners, not always, you know, a low ball or I have to win that. Accept fair offers without trying to extort too much extra. So sometimes there is, like, that offer comes in and you're like, yeah, I like that player, this is fair, click accept. And sometimes if you send an offer and that happens, you're kind of surprised that there is no retort before the deal is done. So that's obviously a part of it, as well as accepting those fair offers. Work with the potential trade partners to help them accomplish their objectives, which you mentioned, and avoid basically telling trade partners what player is objectively worth. Basically, when the offer comes in, don't tell who sent that offer that this player sucks and your player's better. It's kind of the nicest way to put that, I think.
Yeah, and the thing here, and this may seem like a subtle distinction, but when you send out an offer and the first thing you get back from your league mate is a breakdown of exactly what the players are worth, then that can rub you the wrong way, right? Because when you sent the trade offer out, I mean, you had ideas about what you think those guys are worth. So when you get the response and the other person's like, no, this player is worth this, this player is worth this, player is worth that, you're like, well, I mean, maybe to you, right? And so it immediately kind of gets your back up and you're like, well, that's not right. And then you're not in that position to make these moves or continue the discussion. If you instead say, and this may seem like exactly the same thing, right? But if you instead say, this is how I value this guy, this is why I value him here, I understand if you don't value him the same way, saying something as simple as, I understand if you don't have the same value, really opens it up to the discussion. And the person's like, yeah, well, I don't value it the same way, but you know, it's okay that we have different values. Maybe we can work and come to a compromise. And you're very much then into the discussion, where if the person comes back and just like, no, this isn't the value for this guy, then you're like, you know, well, I don't want to talk about it with you then. And so even though that may seem like, you know, purely a matter of semantics or being friendly or what have you, it can make a big difference, because nobody wants to get a reply to their trade offer where someone is telling them what the values are.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I 100% agree. Something that I talk to lots of people about is tone and phrasing are two of the most important things you can do in terms of communication. And that comes in written or verbal format, and when you're writing something to somebody, if the tone isn't right or the phrasing isn't right, and you mentioned it's only a subtle difference, but that subtle difference can make a big difference, especially when you're trying to achieve a goal, no matter what it is. So tip for the week for anyone out there, use phrasing and tone to your advantage. But let's jump into the second half of the show. We're going to dive into some listener questions. An interesting one coming in here from Gene Williams. He emailed it our way. Hi guys, love the shows and all the tools are amazing on RotoViz. He says he's a big believer in zero RB and modified zero RB, which is a hot topic if modified zero RB is actually a thing on the Twitter streets at the moment. But he says, however, in early mock drafts, he's seeing players like Chris Carson in the fifth round, Kareem Hunt in the late fifth round, sixth round, and even Edwards-Helaire in the late third round, early fourth round, and they're falling into the dreaded RB dead zone. Are they players that are exceptions to the rule? And when is it appropriate to deviate from the tried and true approach of avoiding an RB in the dead zone at all costs? So I'll let Sean have the first one to jump into that.
Yeah, and you mentioned it is modified zero RB. I think I always say single elite running back because I think that that describes what it is. And I wouldn't want people to feel like, you know, zero RB fans or believers are trying to take credit for something that is different. I mean, single elite running back is obviously different and a very viable approach there.
I agree, Sean. Single elite is the best way to explain it. But I also, I'm not one for trying to stir things up a lot, but I really enjoy saying modified zero RB on Twitter just to get those reactions. It's a hell of a lot of fun. But I agree with you. The best way to say it is the single elite.
Yeah, so we look at Chris Carson. We look at Kareem Hunt. We pull up the range of outcomes tool, which gives us historical comps for the players and then looks at how those players have performed in the subsequent season. We've got some range of outcomes there, the 25th percentile, 50th percentile, 75th percentile, and some averages. Carson 12.6, Hunt 12.3 in terms of the average projection for 2021. They come in 16th and 18th in the tool. Obviously, that doesn't include rookies, so you have to factor them in as well. Both of those guys have relatively poor 75th percentile outcomes also, which I think when you're talking about drafting players in the dead zone, one of the things you're looking for is, okay, well, I know that there are risks. What is the upside? Now, with Kareem Hunt, the upside would be that if something unfortunately happens to Nick Chubb, then perhaps he absolutely lights the world on fire. With Hunt, you have this chance to get a back who is probably going to score for you and has this elite upside. That might be something that you're interested in there. Chris Carson, we know he's a good player. We know he's someone that the RO actually picked out last year as a must draft guy. And when he played pretty well. I think that what it's telling us this season is that when you're looking at these guys relative to where they're going, they're not overvalued, right? They're not hugely undervalued. And I think that when I'm looking at backs in this round three to round six range, I want them to be very clear values and to have huge upside. So mentions Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think that when you're talking about the third round for him, that's an interesting choice. You look at some of those rookie running backs, and I think DeAndre Swift, J.K. Dobbins, Edwards-Helaire, Antonio Gibson has maybe some differences in ADP where in some formats he's actually quite expensive. You probably wouldn't be interested in some formats. He falls into the middle or late third, and at that price is a little bit more interesting. So we've talked a lot this week about how don't let the structural approach really, really limit you, right? So we look at what the history of the running back dead zone tells us and the players that tend to fall in that area and what the risks are and the limited rewards. And we think, okay, well, if I'm going to take a couple of running backs early, then I want to do it round one, round two. The thing that I'm seeing this year is that wide receivers in round two are unbelievable. And so I have a hard time taking these running backs who are in round two. By contrast, the second year running backs in round three are pretty intriguing. And so I don't necessarily want a lot of them. I'm not going to be putting together running back heavy teams, but if I get some exposure to those guys, even if it's in round three, I know that the receivers I'm getting in round two, the receivers I'm going to get in round four, five, six, very exciting. And so I like taking that risk there. Carson Hunt, probably not as much, in part simply because the wide receivers you have to pass up to take them are so good. Again, look at the format. We discussed in one of the formats earlier this week that the fifth round didn't look particularly appetizing. If you're in a spot where wide receiver looks flat and you have Carson or Hunt there, then maybe you make that pick and then you move back to wide receiver. But if I'm going to take Carson or Hunt, it's going to be in a situation where I plotted that draft out from round 10 back up to round one, and I know that I'm going to get the overall structure that I want. I'm going to get the overall build with a lot of wide receivers, and that's not going to hurt me. I've got to be very careful that I'm not going to lose the players I want by taking Carson and Hunt in that range.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think like there's a couple of ways it might tempt you away from it, but a lot of it is like if a player drops around an ADP, I asked you on one of the shows earlier this week about Mike Davis, and it was interesting. It was a draft I was recently in where he was nearly a round and a half to two rounds below ADP, but like he's a player that I'm not in on in terms of what the likely options are. You did a very good retort in terms of how the Atlanta Falcons offense, like without Julio Jones, mightn't be as high powered this season. So, you know, just because a player drops a round or two in value isn't going to leave them to be enough to pick in the dead zone. I think that's where the likes of Carson fits into that. But when we look at then some of those guys that are in the third round, I know you like J.K. Dobbins. Some of those guys are intriguing. But I think, like we talked about earlier this week too, with the quarterback position in round five in best ball leagues, it becomes very intriguing when the round goes flat. So I think in the third round, like you mentioned, those some of those younger guys with the, you know, you're shooting for the upside can make it a little bit interesting there. But when we really get into that fourth, fifth, sixth round range, it's kind of a tough call unless it's some of the rookie guys that we're looking ahead to. But the next question coming in from Kevin Wilson, he also emailed it in. Huge fan of the show. He said he's in the midst of a full teardown and rebuild. He's in a 12-team, one quarterback league, and he says he only has a handful of building blocks. So he says he owns three 2022 firsts, two 2022 seconds, as well as four 2023 firsts and four 2023 seconds. So he's really stocked up here big time on those future picks for the next 2 years. He said, I'm hearing that I should be aiming to acquire as many 2023 firsts as possible because the class not only seems deeper but full of higher end talent compared to 2022. Do we agree with that? He has sent in his squad for some context as well. So he does have Goff and Lawrence and Matt Ryan at quarterback, does have Dylan, Etienne, Devontae Freeman, unfortunately, they're running back. You know, there is a little, there's Zach Moss as well. It is, he mentioned that he's in a full rebuild, but he does have some nice pieces as well, like Jamar Chase is in there, CeeDee Lamb's in there. So two guys we really like. Curtis Samuel, who I think is an interesting guy this year. Then he does have Mark Andrews and Logan Thomas as well. So there is a couple of guys in there that are very intriguing. What's your thoughts on, you know, storing those firsts 2 years ahead? You know, I've seen this before where we're talking up a draft class and then we get to that draft class and then it's not quite as good, or player falls off from, you know, 2019 to 2020 and so on. What's your thoughts on stocking up those picks, you know, 2 years down the line?
Well, I think he's got a perfect setup here, right? Because you have seven first round picks in the next two drafts. You have three in 2022, you have four in 2023, which is likely to be a little bit stronger. You also have the six second round picks. At a certain point, it gets hard to spend all of those. And so I don't necessarily think that I would be pushing the rebuild back even farther by moving more of the picks into 2023. I think that that split works nicely. But yes, we do agree that the 2023 draft is probably going to be a little bit stronger. If you pull up our Devy rankings that Travis Mace, Stephon Lacco, and Matt Wispy put together, then you see that three of the top four Defi running backs are from this 2023 class. And so a lot of times when you're hearing about the strength of the class, it's because of the strength of those running backs at the top, which both give you the chance to build at that position that's so difficult to acquire in Dynasty and have that window where the players play well. But also then that pushes down the other guys, right? It makes wide receiver a little bit deeper just because you have more of those running backs at the top. If you have some sort of mediocre running backs, then even those guys will move in there and they'll push the wide receivers down. And that'll make your top end first round picks extremely valuable because of those running backs. And then it'll make your bottom end first round picks and early second round picks valuable because the receivers have been pushed down. So I love what he's got here. He says he doesn't have too many building blocks. It's a full rebuild. But at the same time, when you're looking at a team that has Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, Jamar Chase, and CeeDee Lamb, well, you've got a fantastic foundation. I mean, that team is going to be very, very good in a couple of years, almost regardless. He also has a number of our preferred sort of swing for the fences or lottery picks at wide receiver, and De'Ami Brown, Nico Collins, Anthony Schwartz. It's always cool to see people who have obviously looked at some of those articles talking about who are the really cheap guys that you can get basically for nothing who might turn into something. Now, we don't think that they will, but there's that chance that he become the next Terry McLaurin. And then you're one player further along in this rebuild. I love what he's done. I agree with his question in terms of where the strength of it is. But I think that what he already has set up here just has him set up perfectly.
Yeah, I agree with that. And this is definitely, around the time of the draft, I think there definitely was a lot of attention paid to some of your work with the wide receivers selected there, like you mentioned. Hopefully a couple of them will turn out. My next question, he didn't ask this, but with a team like this, I mentioned the likes of Matt Ryan's there. We have AJ Dillon, who if we get to 3 years down the line or 2 years down the line, I think Dillon's still somebody to hold on to. But the likes of Matt Ryan, is that a player to move? Zach Moss, is that a player to move? Just in case he's thinking about moving ahead in terms of gaining some more assets or younger players potentially.
Well, I'm a fan of Moss. I think that is a player who you probably want to hold on to because you're not going to be paid at the level that he could potentially get to. There's more value in holding on the chance that he blows up than to try and sell at the current price. He's devalued to the point where you're not going to get a similar type of asset where, 6 months from now, we could be talking about him in a completely different range. The quarterbacks are interesting, right? Because Matt Ryan, Jared Goff, they have a little bit of value. They can help out a team who is in win now mode. The 12-team leagues are a little bit trickier. I'm currently drafting, and if anybody wants to see what a developmental dynasty draft in an established league looks like, I'm drafting in a Debbie league that has been going for 5 or 6 years, so a lot of the top guys are off the table. We're having our Debbie draft now. It comes up with even a lot of these guys who are now just even getting into college. You can check that out on the site. I go through two rounds of that. It's a 14-team league. In that format, I try and make sure I get some quarterbacks because it's very easy to get to where you have two and then an injury puts you to one. You can end up in that situation where teams can extort you to make a very poor trade because there's nothing you can do there. There are no starters available and you need to play someone at that position. So Goff might be somebody who could be unloaded. Ryan might be somebody who could be unloaded. This is a 12-team league, and 12-team, that's not quite the same dynamic, but there's still some value to helping out one of your league mates who could be in a little bit of trouble. The thing that you want to do is you may make a good trade for yourself, but not extort them, as we talked about sort of at the beginning of the show there. They'll remember that. Most managers will look at that. If you've helped them out a little bit, they'll be willing to help you out in a way in the future. That doesn't mean that they're going to sell you one of their guys at a huge discount or something like that, but be more open to talking trade, more willing if they are going to do one of these things where they say, okay, well, player A, the first person to offer me a third round pick in the next 24 hours gets the guy. If a couple of offers come in around the same time and you're one of them, then maybe it goes in your direction. So, maybe the quarterbacks you can use almost for goodwill. I don't know if they're going to bring anything that turns the team around. But one of the elements here is that if you really are rebuilding, and this is a rebuilding kind of team, I think that this team could be competitive earlier than it seems like. Anything happens to Aaron Jones, anything happens to Devin Singletary, and suddenly Dillon and Moss, they could be scoring a lot of points. We like some of those wide receivers. But at the same time, if you're wanting to stash as many players as possible in that JV and Hawkins kind of range, in that Anthony Schwartz kind of range, then getting rid of those QBs allows you to do that. I wouldn't give them away for nothing, but the value of having the roster spot on a rebuilding team can sometimes be worth more than a low-end QB.
No, really good stuff there. And obviously for any listeners who have any questions, any topics they would like discussed, I do mention this from time to time in the show, but you can email them. These both come in through email at rotavizradio@gmail.com, or you can send them my way on Twitter @OvertimeIreland. We do try and use as many of them as we can. Some really interesting and intriguing questions have been brought up by the listeners over the last 2 or 3 months. We do like that interaction, like getting your questions, so do send them our way if you have any. Sean, as we get ready to wrap up, you teased at the start some recommendations. We haven't really hit the recommendations as much over the last couple of weeks, so maybe we have a couple in store for the listeners.
Yeah, so I just finished watching the last episodes of season 3 of Ozark. And I was blown away by this show the entire time. The first time that I really sort of had it brought to my attention was in a conversation I was having with Josh Hermsmeyer, 3-4 years ago now, where he was mentioning that he had watched it a little bit, was enjoying it, had that a slightly different element to it where, you know, you've got the money laundering. I'm not a huge fan of the shows that go into a lot of depth with some of the sort of organized crime types of things. But you do have some shows from time to time that do it in a way that is just so dynamic. And the show that comes up as a comp that's a much higher profile show, Breaking Bad, differences to it. Breaking Bad, one of the all-time great shows. I think that Ozark actually has much better pacing, and the characters in some ways are more interesting. And so I'm not going to necessarily say it's better, but there are some things about it that I think viewers will like a lot more. And for a show that is long each episode, it's just, you know, you hurtle through it like you're on a roller coaster. So that one, absolutely fantastic. Looking forward to season four. I believe the final season coming out sometime in the second half of the year. If you haven't watched, go ahead and get ready for that final season.
Yeah, it's a show I've really been wanting to watch over the last kind of 2 years, but I've mentioned this on previous shows. I'm in a situation where Caitlin, our daughter, is 3 years old, and sometimes watching certain shows might intend, like we have this thing where we say to her, like, you know, you watch your show, you watch your show. We can see that there's a murder coming up here. You watch your show. So it can be hard to get that balance right, but it's definitely one I want to check out. But from all things I've heard, it's not like I could obviously listen, you know, watch it on an iPad with you know, Bluetooth headphones in, but I would like to watch it on the television, get the full experience. I've heard really good things about it, so might have to try and sneak that in some way. I did watch Loki this week. You know, Marvel Universe, they have, for anyone that's watched Thor, will probably know some of the background story, or the Avengers films, but it's going, I was saying to Sean before it started recording today, it is back to the old format when you're watching on Disney. It's one show a week on the release format. I don't know sometimes if you're better to wait till they're all out so we can get our binge watch going, but each week one episode one in the books, and I really enjoyed it. Another part that I really enjoyed about it is Owen Wilson's in it. I always enjoy a bit of Owen Wilson playing a bit more of a serious role in this one. So for anyone that hasn't checked it out, we're one episode in. It's six episodes long. It could turn out to be very bad, but let's hope that it turns out to be very good. So that's one for myself. Another interesting story about me over the last couple of weeks is I've been doing a lot of landscaping around the house that we moved into in December. So I did the landscape and I seeded the grass basically 2 weeks ago now, and grass is actually growing. So I'm feeling quite like an adult at this point, with people asking me, you know, what's my weekend activity? You know, 5 years ago, I didn't think it would be quite this way, but it's I have green grass, if that's the bonus.
That's good. That's good. You've got your new house. You've got your fancy podcasting setup. You've got your big screen TV that you want to watch the inappropriate shows on, and you're also getting your yard going. I can relate to that a little bit. We're out here in the desert. We're in the drought. Have this amazing, beautiful tree that looks like it is trying to die because it doesn't have any water. So I'm out there every day trying to give it its bath. So yes, working on the yards, trying to make sure the neighborhood stays attractive, and watching some TV shows at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And Sean, if I could, I would. I'm looking out my window here, and the rain is pouring down. I can probably see about 100 meters from my house due to the actual the rainfall at the moment. So I would send some over if I could get that. If you could send me some of the sunshine as well.
It was 113 degrees yesterday.
Okay. Doesn't happen. We don't get that over here. Let's hope we get a bit of rain there and keep the tree moving along. It's another show in the books. It's three shows this week again. We're really going to try and keep this going as much as we can throughout the off-season. We'll have some guests sprinkled in as well. So really fun show. Check out all three. Drop us a written interview on your favorite podcast app. And as always, you can get yourself a 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass with the code RVRadio2021 at checkout. Thanks again for tuning in and sticking with us to the end of the podcast. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. My co-host is Sean Siegel. Check out Sean's work up on rotoviz.com, along with all the other great articles that are up there each and every day. So until we're back next week with some more podcasts, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.